You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is, What the Hell? Now, it's an odd title, I understand, and it's something that you say, well, I don't say these kind of things, and my children certainly don't say these kind of things, but people think these kind of things. And there's different ways to say this little phrase, but it's kind of, what the hell? That's an odd thing. If you break down some of the stuff you say every day, that makes no sense at all. What does what the hell mean? But it's funny how some people use phrases that don't even believe in hell, and they'll pull hell into some conversation. Hell no, what the hell, it's there. It's in our everyday life, our conversations. But what does that mean? Now, here's the definition. There's actually a definition for this little phrase. It's said when you suddenly realize that your plan is not important to you and that you will do something else. Now, I'm going to read this again. You say it, and you may just think it, when suddenly you realize that your plan is not important to you and that you will do something else. It can also mean why not or who cares. Used to express lack of concern or worry, indifference, abandonment, surrender. Now let me tell you where this is coming from. One of my girls the other day in a conversation, just things that happen along the way in a kid's life and maybe when you're talking to people, I tried to explain this thought process to her in terms of her life. And I promise you, if I went around the room and asked for what the hell moments, we have a debris field of stuff in this room because of what the hell moments. And this is what I said to her. There are times in your life when you're rocking along, things are not going well maybe, you've made a decision, you've had a plan, you're going in a direction, and something happens. Something doesn't work out. You thought you were going to get into this school. You didn't. You thought you were going to pass that test. You didn't. You thought this relationship was going to work out and you got dumped. Stuff happens. And all of a sudden in the middle of that situation, you get this thought. Somebody says, hey, try this. Drink a little bit of this. Try a little bit. Take a puff out of this. Try this pill. Hey, you want to do a little something, something with me? And all of a sudden you have this thought out of nowhere. What the hell? Who cares? What difference will it make? My life screwed up anyway. It's all over. I've lost my way. It didn't work out. So what difference will this one little thing do? This is where the course of your life can be completely and totally and dramatically changed in what the hell moments. The conversations I have with women who are tracking along, girls sometimes, I have a conversation with a girl and she'll explain, I kept myself year after year after year after year, and then in a single what the hell moment, gave it all away. You say, oh, well, I was drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. You know what? You know what you were doing when you took the glass in the first place. Now you say, well, you're throwing all of us under the bus because we've all got these moments. That's why we're here. We've screwed our lives up. Some of this isn't always about making you feel better about your past. Some of this is about helping someone not get your future. And for kids who are in this crazy, jacked up world and they're getting bombarded with these thoughts. When I was growing up, you had to chase women. Now you got to run from them. There's no more chasing women. The stories that men tell me about women just coming up and straight up saying, hey, baby, let's go. Let's do it. Your place or mine. Bring it. Women are like, you know what? Forget all this. What the hell? I've already messed my whole life up. I'm going to mess yours up too. And guys are brain dead and, you know, so driven by sex drive and go, yeah, let's go, baby. And then that's their what the hell moment. And next thing you know, someone shows up pregnant. You know, everybody talks about getting pregnant. Nobody talks about all the diseases. Nobody goes to work and, hey, I got a new venereal disease. Let's have a party. Go to lunch with me. Nobody's talking about STDs and all the consequences of these moments. You say, well, you're supposed to be like reading verses. I'm about to. you know, some of you thinking, you saying there's some what the hell in the Bible? Absolutely. Turn to Genesis. Turn to Genesis chapter 15. And I'm going to show you from one chapter, we're going to do two or three of these. And these aren't all of them. This isn't a comprehensive what the hell sermon, but... And believe it or not, I actually pray about these titles, and I almost passed on this one, but God led me to use it. So, that's even scarier, isn't it? Yeah, maybe I should have left that part out. Genesis 15. This is how fast you can get into trouble. Let's go to verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram. His name's not Abraham yet. It's to Abram in a vision. So God shows up in a vision to Abram, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." But Abram said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus?" Then Abram said, "Look, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one shall not be your heir, but one will come from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said," look toward heaven, brings him outside, says, "Look up in the sky and count the stars if you are able to number them." And he said to them, "So shall your descendants be." And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness. So chapter 15, God shows up, speaks up, and he believes. Abram believes. And God accounts it to him for righteousness. Chapter 16, I'm talking verses, just a few verses later. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. We know that. And she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, "See now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her. Have sex with my maidservant Hagar, and we'll get kids through her. She'll be our surrogate." What are you talking about? You say, well, maybe she didn't know about the dream yet. Whatever. Even if she didn't, Abram's got enough sense to go, you know, we're not doing that. God has told me he's going to give me from my own body through you. This is it. This is how we're going to do it. But look what happens. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. This is where you get in trouble. God says stuff. You say, great, I believe it. Absolutely, stars in the sky, all done, all in, this is going to work. And then somebody other than God starts yakking at you. Yeah. Well, what about this? What are you going to do if that doesn't happen? It's falling apart. You still got no kids. And then you have your, what the hell? Take Hagar. Do you know how much trouble there is on this planet over this one decision? One woman, one man, Ishmael, and all hell breaks loose out of that decision. So you say, well, it's no big deal. It's just little old me, and I make decisions, and it doesn't matter, and it doesn't affect anybody. Every decision I make and you make has an impact. Keep reading. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, in other words, keep reading, she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. In other words, Hagar goes, hey, I got game. How about you? Now, I don't like you, Sarai, because I'm the one throwing the babies. Then Sarai said to Abram, my wrong, oh, now it's wrong all of a sudden. See where this goes? My wrong be upon you. I gave my maiden into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me. So Abram said to Sarai, indeed, your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Just chaos. Now, whatever it is that God has told you to do, and maybe I am more after younger people haven't completely screwed their lives up, but maybe it applies to some older people too. And this, whatever old is now, it's moving for me all the time. Whether you're young or whether you're older, let's go with the older. Let's say you're a little bit older, you're single. It doesn't matter if you're single or married. Let's go with married. Well, my marriage is a mess. Been married, met a couple of days, been married 38 years. You know how much problems you can have in 38 years? I'm not getting this, and she's not doing that, and he's a slug, and he blah, blah, this back and forth. And then somebody at the office Someone at the office went shopping, got her some new stilettos and a skirt, and you know, here we go. Well, I wouldn't have any problem with her. She's nice, she smiles, and all of a sudden you're having some what the hell thoughts. It ain't working at home. She doesn't love me. You know what? I have a right to be happy. I'll find somebody to take care of me. What the hell? And then I have to sit and talk to these guys. Well, tell me about yourself. Well, there's this girl at the office, and this led to that. Now we're separated. Now my whole life's jacked up. See, you just think you got trouble now. You got trouble coming. One decision. And see, then you kids, you go, well, but everybody's having fun. Let me tell you something about their fun. Their fun sucks in the end. All that stuff, I'm telling you, I can start, I know you people. I can just pick anybody in the room almost. Almost anybody in the room. Because I know a lot of these stories. And somewhere you got in a spot. And the Holy Spirit himself, if you're a Christian, going, don't do it. It's not the deal, not the deal, not the deal. And you go, what the hell? Doesn't matter anyway. Keeping myself for who? They don't show up. Where is she? And then you do something you said you'd never do. You drink something you said you'd never drink. You shoot up something you said you'd never shoot up. You dance someplace you said you'd never dance. You end up in the sack with some complete stranger because you couldn't stay. Now, the great thing, and this is maybe another message, but I don't want to wait till another one, is that there is incredible amounts of mercy. And see, no matter how many what the hell moments you have, this God will take you back. Now, the thing that you cannot miscalculate, and I've said this repeatedly through the years, you say, well, then I can do whatever I want to because he'll always take me back. You have miscalculated one thing. There is always consequence. A father, a mother, parents who love children, really love them, discipline their children. That's part of the proof that they love them. So God chastens his children or you're not in his family. So you can't be just going popping off doing what you want to do and then say, oh, I have immunity. Nothing's going to happen to me. Because we can also go around the room and say, what was the consequence of that choice? What was the consequence? And it's not pretty. So the thing I would highly recommend to you kids especially is pray for wisdom. And when you get in those moments, you say, Father, help me remember who I am, who you are, whose I am, and that this may be extremely appealing in this moment, but it is not going to pay off in the end. Go to Job. Chapter 2, without telling this whole story, somehow there must be some kind of boardroom in heaven and the devil shows up at meetings. And I don't know how this works, but if you read this thing, you'll see that there's this meeting and God suggests Job to the devil, to Satan. He says, have you considered my servant Job? He's the man. And so then Job wipes out all of his livestock, all of his children, kills them all. And that report comes to Job. So he's lost almost everything he can lose. Then the devil says, well, of course, you know, he still trusts you. Job didn't back off. Of course he trusts you. He's still got his life. And then God says, okay, I authorize you to do whatever you want to do to him, but you cannot take his life. You can take his health, whatever. So you say, well, what's God doing up there? You know what? He's doing whatever he wants to do up there. You say, well, I don't like it. You don't have to like it. You have to trust him. You say, well, I don't want to trust him. Then what are you going to do? Tell me about your big plan now. So Job has lost all of his family. Now he gets attacked by the devil with permission. And by the way, the devil, Satan, you say, there's no devil, whatever. The devil, the demons cannot do anything to you without God's permission. Do you know that? Yep. Maybe that doesn't make you feel better, but anyhow. Now he's got boils from head to toe, and he's taking stuff and scraping the boils off of his body. He's in trouble. Okay, so read here with me a little bit. Verse 4 of Job 2. So Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes, sackcloth and ashes. He's grieving, and on top of that, now he's dying, he's sick. Then look at verse 9, and I'm not trying to throw the women under the bus, just citing a couple here. We'll get to the guys in a minute. Then his wife said to him, what the hell? Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. And that's exactly what the devil said that Job would say. And now she's thinking it and saying it. You know what? What are you talking about? Integrity? Look what's happened to us. Look what's happened to you. Look at you. You're a mess. Curse this God that you've been trusting all these years and drop dead. It's over. I love the fact that the word integrity is used here. It doesn't matter whether your plan is working or not. Stick to your plan. And if your plan is to trust him and obey him and serve him, if you end up nowhere with nothing, it is better to die with integrity than to end up with a bunch of stuff and lose that. And people may mock you, say, dude, look at you. You're trusting in God. You're obeying God. You're serving God. You got nothing. Come with us. Party with us. Let's go get in trouble with us. You know, whatever. Change your plan. Don't change your plan. There is no better plan than his plan. But he said to her, look at this, lost all of his children, all of his possessions, all the livestock at least. He said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. You say, well, I like it when God blesses me. But if he's not going to bless me, what the hell? I'm out. I'm going to go bless myself. Let's take somebody who's in a lot of debt and you're trying to do the right thing and you got Joseph and everybody at church telling you, hang in there, cut up your credit cards, do all this stuff. You're rocking along. I know people that freeze their credit cards. They can't cut them up yet, but they freeze them. And by the time they get a hankering to buy something online, they have to wait for their credit card to thaw out before they can use it. And then maybe the temptation is passed. You're trying so hard to live within your means, and then the stress gets so great, you get completely overwhelmed. You go, I'm tired of doing this. I'm going to do something for me. And you go, what the hell, and slap the credit card down and charge something with money you don't have, you're not going to have. And then, boom, it piles up on you again. You got some temporary relief and got a little hit, and wow, I'm the man, and I'm going to, you know, whatever. And then what? More mess. Matthew chapter 26. And I'm going to read you some big time consequence here. I also probably need to throw this in here. Part of my consternation of preaching nice little sermons to you people that are sitting here is it isn't just about you. And when people walk up to me and say, I listen every day on the radio, truck drivers, people completely messed up, just way out there. Sermons like this make sense to people like that. They may make you really nervous, but I'm not just talking to you. Because there are people out there who don't get this, and if you don't break it down and put it in terms they actually understand, they are never going to get it, because we talk in so much religious ease, they don't understand. What are you people talking about? I don't live here. I don't know. What are you doing? Matthew 26. Now look at this. Verse 1. Now it came to pass when Jesus had finished all these things that he said to his disciples, you know that after 2 days is the Passover and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified. Now whether they understood this or not, he kept talking about it. He's their leader. He's God and the man. He's a miracle worker. He's just unbelievable. And he keeps talking about dying. Then the chief priests, the scribes, and the elders of the people assembled at the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and plotted to take Jesus by trickery and kill him. So he's saying, I'm going to die, and they're trying to figure out a way to kill him. But they said, no, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. And when Jesus was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him having an alabaster flask of very costly fragrant oil, and she pours it on his head as he sat at the table. This stuff probably cost a year's salary. But when his disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, why this waste? For this fragrant oil might have been sold for much and given to the poor. But when Jesus was aware of it, he said to them, why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a good work for me. For you have the poor with you always, but me you do not have always. And this is not my sermon today. Let me tell you something. Sometimes there is a case for extravagance. This is God and a man, and this woman comes worshiping, expressing something. She has done a good work for me. You have the poor with you always, but me you do not always have. For in pouring this fragrant oil on my body, she did it for my burial. Assuredly, I say to you, now he's talking about dying, now he's already off to his funeral. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her. And here we are telling about it. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, "What are you willing to give me if I deliver him to you?" And they counted him 30 pieces of silver. So from that time, he sought opportunity to betray him. Now Judas has a what the hell moment. Go to John chapter 12, a few pages to the right, and look at this description. John chapter 12, verse 1. Then 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, who had been dead, whom he had raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served, but Lazarus was one of those who sat at table with him. Then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointing the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. People say, well, this is the same story. Somebody hits his head, now somebody hits his feet. It's even more ridiculous. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. But one of his disciples, now in this case, one of them, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray him, said, "Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He even knew what it would bring. This he said, and look at this, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box and he used to take what was put in it. He was stealing from Jesus. He didn't care about the poor. He's like, if we had sold that, it'd be in the box and I'd have some more to skim off the top. He was the accountant. What is Jesus, nuts? You don't put a guy like Judas over the money. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. She has kept this for the day of my burial. For the poor you have with you always, but me you do not always have." Now, if you keep reading, you know what ends up happening to Judas? One what the hell moment. What is he thinking? This guy's talking to, I've followed him 3 years. Well, I've seen amazing things happen. He's talking about going to Jerusalem and he's saying he's going to die. Now he's talking about his burial and we're wasting money pouring stuff on his head that I could have had. It's all about to be over. It's going to be a disaster. Then what are we going to do? You know what? What the hell? I'm going to go turn him in for 30 pieces of silver. Betray Christ himself. Do you know what he ends up doing? He comes to himself and is so overwhelmed by what he has done, he goes out and hangs himself. He commits suicide. That is a what the hell moment. You say, well, it really doesn't matter what I do. It matters what you do, because some of the stuff you do in those moments, when you finally realize what you've done, the devil can just completely overwhelm you. Now, how does this work? Go to John chapter 8. In John chapter 8, this discussion here, Jesus is talking to some religious guys, and this is the root of all this stuff. John 8, go down to verse 42. Jesus said to them, "If God were your father," they were claiming that God was their father, they're the Jews, the religious leaders, "you would love me. If he was really your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God, nor have I come of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Because you're not able to listen to my word. You are of your father, the devil." Now, this is not the way to make friends and influence people. I'm just telling you right now. "You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning." And you know why Jesus knew this about him? Because he made him. That's how Jesus knew all this stuff. He made Satan. "He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me."
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there in the talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
Now, where do these thoughts come from? How does the enemy do this? It's unbelievable, and it can destroy your life. He has to use lies, and what the hell moments are all built on lies. It won't matter. Knock yourself out. Go for it. Who cares anyway? Let me go back and read you the definition. When someone says, "What the hell?" it is said when you suddenly realize that your plan is not important to you and that you will do something else. What is your plan? You got a plan? You say, "I don't really have a plan." What the hell then? Whatever. And how's that working out for you? Get a plan. Get a God. Get the God.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.